It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the publisher and editor of The Timber Jay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's start off with the St. Louis County Schools. There's some news there having to do with problems in some of the schools and Johnson Controls. That's a name that you know a lot about. But tell us what's going on and what St. Louis County Schools is prepared to do now.
Sure. Well, you know, it's been about 8 years since construction of the Northwoods and South Ridge schools. Of course, the Northwoods School is near Cook. And the Southridge School is down near Canyon. And after 8 years now, they've been experiencing a number of problems, almost from the beginning, actually, at these schools. But finally, I think after efforts to try to get some of the companies involved in the construction of these schools to, you know, sort of take some ownership over some of these problems, the superintendent of the school district this week told the school board in a study session that she is going to be seeking their authorization to pursue legal action, and this would be against Johnson Controls, Kraus Anderson, and Architectural Resources. These are the three companies that either designed or oversaw the work on these two school projects. And these two new schools were built at a cost of about $60 million combined. They were part of a very controversial district-wide restructuring plan that was adopted about a decade ago now. And this is certainly going to, I think, dredge up some unpleasant memories for a lot of folks. You know, I know there's been quite a bit of frustration up in this part of the school district in particular. Still a lot of unhappiness about the way that restructuring went about. And the fact that there have been these ongoing problems with these schools just continues to kind of irritate folks, I think. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, at this point, the school board hasn't made a decision yet about whether to hire a law firm, but, you know, Superintendent Reggie Engelbretson made it pretty clear that she thinks that's what they need to do. They had reached out last year to these companies to try to get them to address some of these problems. And we had written about this actually last year, and actually Reggie Engelbretson said that she'd been hearing from members of the public over the course of the last few months after those reports in our paper. You know, people were asking her, you know, when are you guys going to do something about this? You know, there are fairly significant problems. And, you know, it's a wide variety of things. And I think, you know, there's one or two issues. I know at Southridge there's some actual structural problems with the school, which I think would be probably quite expensive to repair. A lot of the other issues are relatively minor, perhaps, but I think it's just that there's a whole long list of things. Uneven settling of sidewalks that are creating tripping hazards. You've got a lot of cracking of sidewalks, which just suggests that things were unstable. You've got a little bit of cracking in some places in the school buildings. I know we have a concessions building at the athletics field at Northwood where the floor has settled like 6 inches in some parts, and it's forcing fixtures like cabinets and bathroom stalls, things like that, to pull away from the wall. You know, so all these things, you know, they may seem somewhat minor, but the cost of repairing them could be very substantial, because you're going to have to probably tear things up and then put more fill in and then replace all of that. So, you know, when you start adding all of these different things up, it's probably going to be millions of dollars. And so that's obviously why the school district is quite concerned about seeing this level of, you know, deterioration in these buildings as quickly as they're seeing it. I mean, these buildings are, you know, about 8 years old, and then you expect school buildings generally would last for many decades. So at the rate things are going, obviously these buildings might not last that long. So the school district is rightfully concerned here.
All right. You'll keep us updated.
For sure.
Let's move into the city council meeting. I always love hearing what's happening in Tower. Sounds like you had a big crowd at the last meeting. I've been to a couple of local city council meetings, and I'm usually one of five people at them. How many people showed up, and what went on?
Yeah, well, we had about 60 people show up. In fact, they held the meeting at the Civic Center in Tower, and that was in part because they expected there would be a large crowd. In recent weeks, there's been growing number of people showing up for these city council meetings. In fact, the last two, they've just been jam-packed in the usual council chambers, which are relatively small. You know, the council chambers are fine for the council and maybe up to a dozen people, but anything beyond that, it's standing room only, and people are spilling out into the hallway and things like that. So having it at the Civic Center turned out to be a good idea, because there's no way they could have fit that many people in the current council chambers. You know, people are turning out because, you know, as we've been talking about here on the radio, there's kind of an ongoing power struggle between some of the new members of the council, including the new mayor and the city clerk. And the ambulance director, who've been kind of running the city here for the last few years with a very weak council. And so you're seeing some of those issues, but also I think kind of the headliner this time was the audit report. You know, the city audit reports have been, you know, normally they're as dry as dirt and nobody ever pays much attention to them. Unfortunately, the previous city councils had not been paying much attention to them either, and that has kind of allowed a ongoing problem to sort of accumulate, and I think kind of came to a head this year when the auditors reported that the city is really facing a pretty substantial cash crunch. What's been happening is, over the years, they've been kind of using their piggy bank, which was their ambulance fund. You know, they do have their own ambulance service, which generates about $100,000 a year in profits. And over a period of a number of years, that had built up a fairly substantial fund balance, but the funds aren't really there anymore because the city, in order to pay operations or cover deficits in some other projects, whether it's a street project or their harbor project, they've been taking money from the ambulance fund, you know, to cover those, and now the fund is substantially depleted. It wouldn't be a huge issue right now, except for the fact that the previous council, and one of the last things they did before leaving office, was order a $250,000 ambulance. And now the question is there enough money to pay for it? And so there's some questions there. And if they do pay for it, then, you know, does the city have sufficient cash to cover its cash flow needs, much less cover any kind of a unexpected thing like a sewer break or something like that, which can be very expensive. So there's obviously a lot of concern about, you know, the city's financial future and kind of how to repay, you know, some of these accounts that have been tapped in order to cover deficits in other areas. And, you know, we're also finding out now that the city has been selling land in order to kind of cover some of these expenses. But there's questions about, you know, how sustainable is that to start selling off city assets to cover your, you know, operational costs. So a lot of questions are being asked. Some of the area townships are also concerned about this because they pay into the ambulance service. They pay for a subsidy to help provide for the purchase of ambulances, and so they're worried that maybe that money is being diverted to city operations. So they want to make sure that their money is being essentially in a lockbox for, you know, ambulance equipment, rather than being used to help cash flow the city of Towers. So you actually had a number of people at this meeting on Monday at the city council meeting who were from some of the area townships, and they were asking questions about that as well. So there's lots of things to we'll be following up on here, and we'll be watching this story, obviously, for an extended period of time while the city tries to deal with this situation.
You know, in weeks past, we've talked about the mayor and that his emails have been read, but did you know anything about this funding stuff? Was that news to you?
Well, actually, no, because we had reported on this last year. Last year, the auditors had made a similar argument. I don't think they made it quite as forcefully as perhaps they did this year. But the the previous council, really, I don't think they really picked up on the fact that there was a problem. I think the auditor tried to state it, but, you know, they asked no questions after last year's audit report, and that was in stark contrast to this year, because there were a lot of questions this year regarding the audit. both from members of the council, but mostly actually from folks in the audience, because Mayor Orlin Krigstad did open up the meeting to questions from the audience for the auditors, and there were a lot of questions.
Okay. And no mention of the email yet?
Not at this point. That is still under investigation. And, of course, once something's under investigation, you really don't get much information about it until, you know, something's determined.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another story you've been covering in the Timber Jade. It has to do with a new product made of wood pulp and recycled paper. What are they making? What's kind of the potential here?
Sure. Well, yeah, the researchers at the Natural Resources Research Institute in Duluth, that's, of course, affiliated with UMD, they are working on a new product. It would be like a food serving container that would be made out of either wood pulp or waste paper. And they're trying to develop essentially an alternative for, you know, the single-use plastic containers that so much food comes in these days. And, of course, I think we're all increasingly aware of just some of the issues with plastic and how that accumulates in the waste stream and in our lakes and oceans and everything else, and what a huge issue that is. NRRI is trying to develop an alternative. And, of course, the nice thing about using paper or pulp is you have a recyclable product, or a compostable product, I should say. And so that helps to deal with that waste issue. And then, of course, the other part about this is they're hoping that this would generate a new manufacturing sector for Minnesota if this product holds up to the testing that is currently underway. Then this could potentially be, you know, a new industry for Minnesota. Obviously, we've got plenty of wood pulp and plenty of waste paper. So NRRI is hoping that this might be a new industry here in Minnesota.
All right. Before we go, Marshall, you've got some new information on walleye numbers on Lake Vermilion. What'd they find out?
Well, they found out that the walleye numbers appear to have taken a little dip this year. And, of course, Lake Vermilion is well known for its outstanding walleye fishery. The numbers that they had found this year in the annual test netting that the DNR does would be considered really good for, most any other lake in Minnesota. But for Vermilion, it was down. I mean, their average catch was, I think, 11.8 walleye per net in the eastern part of the lake. And last year, however, the average was 16 lake-wide, and I believe it was 21 per net on the east end of Vermilion. So, you know, typically you get some pretty big numbers on Vermilion, and this year it was down a little bit. On the west end, however, actually the numbers were slightly above average, and I should mention there's a distinct difference in the fishery on the west end of Lake Vermilion as opposed to the east side. So it's not unusual to see these kinds of differences between the two ends of the lake. But the good news here is, you know, while there is a bit of a dip this year, it appears that the long-term prospect looks pretty good, because they have what appears to be a very strong year class from 2018, and those fish will start to be getting into that eater size range here probably by late summer or fall, and then certainly will be, prime target for anglers come 2020. So, this dip that appears to be in place will most likely be a temporary one. And in the meantime, there are still plenty of fish that are on the larger end, between kind of 14 and 20 inches. And there's still a good population of those in the lake. The kind of the missing fish were sort of the ones in the middle, you know, the 14 and under. And there was kind of a deficit there because they had a weak year class in 2017. The other thing that's happened, too, is, you know, the DNR did liberalize the harvest on Vermilion in the last year or so. They narrowed the protected slot in order to allow anglers to harvest more fish on the lake. And I think, to some extent, that, you know, change in the slot limit probably did allow for a bigger harvest. And, so essentially the DNR achieved some of what it was trying to do here in terms of just allowing more fish to be taken. And, of course, the downside is if you take more fish, you're going to have fewer until your next good, strong year class comes through, and then you'll build it back up again. So, I mean, there's still going to be good fishing, obviously, on Vermilion. There always is. But it looks like a temporary downward blip in the numbers here, which hopefully will recover next year.
Fishing on an open lake sounds really good right now.
I know. And at this point, I think we'll have open water by fishing opener, but, you know, who knows? It's been kind of a disappointing April so far.
That's right. It's Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. We'll check in next week. Marshall, thanks.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.